Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Real Talk Radio. I am your host, Kay Sherelle, America's favorite Southern Belle. Today after Christmas, and I thank you so much for joining me so bright and early on this shopping morning. Well, let's just get started, shall we? Today we are talking about racism, and we're not just going to just have the general conversation about racism. We're going to get to the bottom of some common stereotypes. So I'm so excited about that this morning. So this is my question for you, my African-American counterparts. I'm asking you, are we our biggest oppressors? That's the question of the day. We're going to get right into it just as soon as we address a few more issues. First of all, I'd like to go ahead and introduce the co-host this morning, Jordan, if you want to say good morning to the callers. Listeners,
fans. What, really have fans? I didn't know I did.
I wasn't talking about your fans. I was talking about my fans.
Oh, this is so self-centered. Good morning, listeners.
So we've already talked about the topic of the day, so very quickly, let's just address this week in retrospect, shall we? Okay, yesterday was Christmas. Wow, what can I say about Christmas Day? It was an interesting day, to say the least. I spent Christmas down south, and this is actually where I am hosting the show from this morning, rather than Atlanta. I am in the big, big, big city of Sylvester, Georgia. If you do not know what Sylvester is, you're missing out. I am from the peanut capital of the world. Who can say that?
I'm not right. That's crazy.
Peanut capital of the world.
What is it like? 6th of October or something, like that's a parade.
It's the third Saturday in October. If you're ever down south, the third Saturday in October, you must check out the Peanut Festival. So, also, several things happened this week. Eddie Murphy's untimely death, quite tragic, full cardiac arrest, age 32.
Who is Brittany Murphy?
She's an actress. I love her movies. She did, okay, first one I remember sitting in was Clueless. She did Uptown Girls with Dakota Fanning. Everybody knows Dakota Fanning, the little girl who won an Oscar.
Nah, that sounds like a bunch of chick flicks, but okay.
You watch chick flicks. You and your girl probably sit up and you have tissue in your hand, hiding your little eyes at the little sad parts.
Yeah,
I still make noise when Shelby dies. You laugh, and I know you know what I'm talking about. So her untimely death, and of course they had many tributes to Michael Jackson this week. That's still very hard for me. Love Michael, rest in peace. Your brothers, they know where they're going for having a show about your death. That's another topic for another day, though. All right, so let's get into it, because this week in retrospect is taking a sad note now that we brought up MJ. So going to address stereotypes. We're going to talk about racism. So one of the stereotypes that we're going to address, I don't really know when exactly this stereotype started, but the stereotype is that all black kids live in a single parent home. That's one of the stereotypes that we're going to address this morning. Growing up, I really didn't think about it because everybody I knew, with the exception of one of my cousins, lived in a two-parent home. So, I don't know. Were we the big exception? I mean, what about you, George? What do you have to say about the single-parent home? Did you really know many kids lived in a single-parent home?
Well, I mean, honestly, like, my personal experience, I grew up all around people who had two parents in the home. So, I mean, I didn't realize it until I actually left. And I had a few people ask me, like, so you got both of your parents in the home? And I was like, is that uncommon or something? Like, what? I just thought where you were from. I was like, no, I have both parents of my own, so it was kind of weird for me, too.
Exactly. All of my friends lived in two-parent homes. Well, I had one friend who didn't, and that was because I think her dad had passed, but everyone else was pretty much in a two-parent home. So, you know, when I started hearing that and, you know, everybody's talking about the statistics and how it affects, you know, the child's development not to have both parents, I was like, really? That many people don't have both their parents at home? It was, you know, I don't know. I guess maybe I didn't think about it. So the next one that we're going to address, only blacks are on welfare.
That's probably one of the most controversials right there. I mean, come on.
Only.
White people make up, what, 70% of the population in the U.S. and only black people are on welfare? That's kind of funny.
Exactly. So we're going to address that one today, too, because I did find out a little bit crazy when I used to work for the DOL and go to the welfare office. I could have sworn there was some other racists sitting in the lobby. And the last one, the white man is the oppressor. The white man is the one who is holding us back from success.
I consider that to be the grand finale.
Okay. So here we go. Important information for all of my listeners out there. If you want to call into the show, let me give you the call-in number right now. It's 646-595-4522. So go ahead and write the number down. Be ready to call in when we bring up the question of the day. So let's just jump right into it, Jordan. Let's address this first stereotype of all black kids living single-parent homes. Let's address that. My question is there any truth to this stereotype?
Well, I mean, it's truth. I'm saying there's a lot of truth in it, but I would say, I think what most people, if a single-parent home is more publicly known with the African-American culture, more so than the white. Because, I mean, you see it all the time, but, I mean, I guess the baby mama drama, all of these, like, slang words, I guess, that is derived from the baby mama, from black people, is what's making it, I guess, publicly known. You know what I'm saying?
So you're saying our colloquialism has attributed to this stereotype?
Dramatically.
You know what? I can 100% agree with that, because one thing I will say that I noticed my early years in college, although I went to an HBCU, I had many white counterparts, classes, of course, and I noticed that if they became pregnant under a certain age, they got married. And I didn't really see that with my black friends. They felt no need to get married just because the girl was pregnant. But I noticed that with the white in particular, Anglo-Saxon, Caucasian, however you address yourself, that they would get married. And I just thought that was so interesting that, you know, they were 17 and 18 years old and they would get married. But it was really to sort of unite the family and keep them from being divided. I can see why they would do it. But I always brought up the question of how in love were they really? I know if you spend time with someone long enough, you'll fall in love. But were they in love when they got married? I don't really know. That's the question. So let's address this stereotype. So, of course, you know, I had to go and do my research. Let's just start with the numbers. How many kids live in single-parent homes? Well, according to data that was collected in 2005, 25.4% of white kids live in single-parent homes. 25%. What do you think about that number?
That's 25% of all white people, right? Or that's everybody.
That's 25% of white kids.
Okay, that's a big chunk. That's a big chunk of white people that's in single-parent homes.
That is. That's a huge chunk.
I mean, those are the numbers, right?
So maybe we should start a stereotype that all of them live in single-parent homes. 25% that's not a small number.
Right. Maybe it's closely tied to poverty or something. I don't know. So what's the numbers for black people?
Hold on. We're getting there. Okay. Now, this next number is interesting to me. 63.3% of American Indian or Alaskan Natives live in single parent homes. 63.3%. Why don't they have that stereotype?
Maybe because we make up, what are we, the second ethnic group in the U.S.?
Yeah, we actually are. Whites account for 80% of the population in the U.S., 80%.
What are we, like 12, 13%?
Yes, on the 13%, 12.8%.
Wow, okay.
And so then what's left is everyone else. So, I mean, 63% of, you know, there are only about 2% of you in the U.S., and of that 2%, 63% of you live. That's basically saying that all of you live in a single-parent home. Why don't they have that stereotype?
Well, I mean, probably mainly because their parents are in the other country. Like, they're in the other country, and they just came here to work. You know what I'm saying?
Native American. I did not say anything about the Hispanic Latino population.
All the same to me.
Okay, so let's get to the black number. This is the number everyone is waiting on. 69.5% of black babies born into the U.S. in 2005 were born into single-parent homes. 69.5% of black babies born in the U.S. in 2005 were born into a single-parent home.
So, like, do we deserve this stereotype?
That's a great question. Right now we have a caller in on the line. I'm going to take a quick comment about these numbers.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the air on Real Talk Radio. This is Kay Sherrell, and Jordan's on the line. Who am I speaking with? Hello? Caller, are you there? Guess not. Whoever you are calling me with that 404, hit me back. Would love to hear your comment this morning. All right, so let's just keep right on talking about this number. I mean, 69.5, that's huge.
Yeah, that's a huge chunk of 12% of the population of black people. Did you do the numbers? Do you know exactly how many people it is?
You know what? I actually did not do the math on that particular number. I mean, but let's see. I have the number of how many. There are 37,909,341 blacks in the U.S.
Okay, that's a lot. But if you take 69.5% of that, 2 million, like that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. But you see, the way the number is calculated, it is a little bit crazy because it said of the babies that were born in the U.S., I kept getting conflicting numbers about how many were born, but several million, yes, were born in that particular year. So, I mean, that's still a big number. I don't care how you add it up, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
That's a huge number. So I don't know. I'm just a little taken aback by it. And then I remember growing up, when I was in high school, they had this crazy little song out called My Baby Daddy. And
I remember that song.
Who that is, my baby daddy? Who that is, my baby? I was like, are you serious? And not to put anyone on front street, because I'm not going to blast anyone out, but I am closely related to a young man whose baby mama thought that was her official theme song.
That's ridiculous. I don't see how you would embrace being a baby mama or a baby dad. I don't see how one could just want to be a baby. Like is a baby like a pocketbook or something?
It's a new accessory. You didn't know? Maybe it's the new black.
I mean, that's crazy. It's crazy that it's come to that.
Exactly. So let's pause real quick. Let's see if this caller wants to talk to us this morning. Good morning, you're on Real Talk Radio. Who am I speaking with? Hello? Caller? You don't want to talk? All righty then. I don't know who you are in this 404, but I'm telling you, I keep trying to talk to you. You're not talking to me. I'm getting a little offended this morning. What's going on? What's the issue? So we have another caller on the line. We're going to go ahead and take this comment.
Hello?
Good morning. You're on Real Talk Radio. Who am I speaking with?
This is Brenda.
Good morning, Miss Brenda. How are you doing? Thank you so very much for joining us so bright and early on this Saturday morning when you could be out shopping. Want to take your comment very quickly about the all black babies live in single parent homes.
Well, my comment is that when I grew up in my day, I didn't know two parent homes. Most of the children that I grew up with had only one parent in the home, and I grew up in the 70s. So what was strange to me is when I met children with two parents in the home.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
So do you think this attributes to all of that free love back in the 60s and the 70s with the hippies and all of that? What do you think what attributed to that?
Well, I don't even think black folks know about the free love back in the 70s in the neighborhood I came from. But I do believe that what contributed to the one-parent home in my house is most of the men just left. Because
wow.
I grew up in a household with nothing but women. My grandmama, my great-grandmother, and my aunts, and everybody mostly in that family was women. And those women was very strong women, and the men, I guess, decided they didn't want to stay.
Wow. I'm kind of curious. So do you believe that this stereotype has come about from the consistency of black people not having two parents in the home?
I don't know. I really don't know. I can't answer that.
Because, I mean, for the rate to be, I don't know what the numbers were for back then, but if the rate has stayed the same from the 60s, 70s, all the way through until 2010, that stereotype probably could develop. I mean, 69.5% is a big chunk.
That's a huge number. But what's interesting to me is Ms. Brenda grew up in the 70s, and everyone she knew lived in a single-parent home. I grew up in the 80s. 80s and the 90s, my stomping ground. Everyone I knew had both their parents at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you grew up, everyone you knew had two-parent homes. So, I mean, are we the big exception, Jordan? I mean, I'm not following. You know, I'm getting a little lost as we went from the 70s to all of that. You know, in the 80s, there was this big two-parent home. And then in the 90s, I still knew many kids that lived in two-parent homes, but I know that that's sort of when the mid to late 90s is when this huge thing of single parenthood sort of became the epidemic, is how, you know, they always talk about it on TV. It's an epidemic.
Well, you know what? During the 70s, I'm thinking that maybe because the 80s and the 90s, that children that grew up with two parents' homes, it was during the 70s when most of the children said to themselves that they wasn't going to expose their children to one parent. I know that's what it was in my mind, that my children were going to have both of their parents.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that, too. People always want more for their kids than, you know, they want for themselves. But I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about the history of it, and my family has always been a two-parent home. I'm sitting here and I'm just rolling everything back in my head as we're talking, and I grew up in a two-parent home. Both of my parents grew up in a two-parent home. Grandparents grew up in a two-parent home. I'm wondering why we can't kill this 69.5%. You know, we carry it from one generation to the next. If you want more for your kids than you want it for yourself,
yes.
Can we keep 100%? That bothers me.
It bothers me, too, to listen to the statistics. It's frightening.
Well, Ms. Brenna, I thank you so very much for joining us this morning on Real Talk Radio. I hope you will continue to listen to the rest of the show.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'm highly disturbed at this point with the number that I just had to read off to you. So hopefully we'll see some brighter days. So I'm concluding on this, Jordan. You can go against it or let me know how you feel. I feel like we brought the stereotype on ourselves.
Yes, I can agree on that. I mean, years and years of the same thing will make one person think. You have to know that they're what you have.
Yeah, we brought this on ourselves. All right, so let's go to only blacks, our own welfare. Only blacks. We only make up 12.8% of the population in the U.S. Let me give you the number of how many of us there are now. 37,909,341. Now, our counterpart make up 237,854,954. Can you hear those numbers just ringing in your head? We went from 37 million now to 237 million. They outnumber us by 200 million. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. That's good. Oh, my goodness. Like, seriously? And, like, what's crazy about it, how can only black people be on welfare?
Exactly. Well, I mean, let's talk about what welfare was designed for. Welfare was, you know, a project that the government came up with, of course, that just went haywire at some point around the early 80s. Welfare was originally designed for the elderly. The elderly and the disabled. That's who welfare was designed for. But I guess in maybe this epidemic of single parent homes, there became this trend of, not necessarily a trend, but there was all of these families who could no longer support their kids. So you think about, you know, what minimum wage was back then. I know when I got my minimum wage, it was $3.75. And then it was up a few months later to, I want to say, $4.15. And we were so excited about the $4.15. So $3.75 minimum wage, you got all these single parents. So maybe that's where it kind of went haywire. But this is the number. Okay. So 38% of the white population is on welfare. 38%. But they have 237 million. Okay. Asian population makes up only 4.4% of the population. That's over 14 million. They have 2.8% of people on welfare. And black, 37% of blacks are on welfare. Now, this number is 1% lower than the white population, but you have to remember that they outnumber us by 200 million.
Yes, even though, I mean, that they probably have more people on welfare than we have people in the U.S.
Hey, that's probably what it means. So this is the data. Let's just look at it. Okay, blacks on welfare. I did the math. They said that it was 37%, 14,026,456 blacks in the U.S. on welfare.
14 million.
14 million.
So we have 14 million on welfare, and they outnumber us by 200 million.
Yes.
Okay. Percentages for the white people. Let's do that for the white man, I guess.
38% of their population is on welfare. That is 90,384,882.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
They have more people on welfare than we have in the U.S.
Okay, I don't see where this stereotype comes from.
Maybe it's because we publicize welfare. We put it in the songs, the little shirts. I remember seeing a little shirt called Hood Rich or something, had a big bird on it, pulling like food stamps in his hand. Like, those of you who did not grow up during, you know, the 80s and early 90s, you don't remember that food stamps was actual paper money.
Paper money.
It was paper money.
Like, I remember this. This image has not left my mind ever since I think about, every time I think about welfare. ODB, do y'all remember him?
Oh, Dirty Dancing.
Like, I remember him saying on camera, he was like, well, I'm finna, he pulled up in front of the welfare office in a limo and said, I'm about to go get my welfare. But I was like, I just started looking at the television. He was like, why not? It's free money. I'm thinking to myself, like, this man is really crazy. And, like, people see this every single day.
Yeah. I don't understand how we publicize it. That's what I'm thinking attributes to this stereotype. We publicize it.
It's a limo.
In a limo?
The limo.
Like, isn't it some kind of welfare fraud or something? He's been arrested on site.
A limo and got welfare. It's crazy.
No, what's crazy is the people sitting behind the desk looking at this dude get out of a limo and then they give him food stamps. That's crazy to me. Because as soon as he walked in that place, I would say, sir, it's time for you to reapply. Check stubs, tax papers, driver's license. I mean, what is that about? Now, that is crazy.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of white people, this stereotype, that black people are lazy. I mean, I guess that's a, I don't see where that stereotype comes from, but a lot of people think that, too. As far as the welfare thing, I mean, that's a big percentage that's on welfare. I mean, 37%, but I mean, white people are 38%. I mean, that stereotype can apply there, too.
I mean, it could. I mean, maybe all of that sort of bottled up together accounts for the only. But, I mean, that's the thing that bothers me. Is that they say only. Okay, I can see they say a lot of black people are on welfare. Okay, 37% of our little 12.8, that is a lot. I will give you that. But to say only, only. Only. Like, the U.S. government is sitting there saying, you know what? We're only going to give welfare to black people. Like, sign the bill. Pass through the house.
But why is there a big percentage on welfare of black people? Like, I'm trying to figure out. Like, I mean, that I guess for me, welfare would not be acceptable at all. I mean, what's the graduation rate, I guess? Because when you graduate from high school, usually you end up doing something. Today's, I mean, a high school diploma is nothing, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, like, if you end up flipping burgers or doing whatever, it's so easy to get fired, especially with today's recession. So why would you put yourself in that position so you don't have a steady job that would put you in a position where you would end up on welfare?
I don't know what to really say about all of that, but I don't know. I guess I shouldn't be disturbed by it, but I am. I think that maybe the other thing they sort of attribute to is the fact that we will publicize the fact that we're going to steal our food stamps. I mean, let's just put it, this is real talk. Let's talk about it. Will we not sell it?
Yes, we will. We will sell some food stamps. Like, I'm so for it. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, let's just say it. I mean, I know I'm at work, and people are talking about, oh, I got to go get my food stamp. Like, go get your food stamp. Like, yeah, I bought some. I'm like,
I got 30 for 35. Just give me $35, but you're studying food stamps.
I mean, you don't even have to do that. You can match it dollar for dollar because, remember, it's not tax.
Yeah, you're right.
And then there are so many things that you cannot buy with food stamps. You know what I'm saying? You can't buy it.
I don't know. I don't see how it's that cool, though. That's not cool to me at all. Like, I would not want to live on food stamps.
Okay. Well, we got a caller calling in. Let's just take this call. Let's come in very quickly. Good morning. You're on Real Talk Radio. This is Kay Sherrill with Jordan. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, Kay Sherrill. This is Keon. How's everything going?
Everything is good. How are you?
Good. You know, I was just listening to you and George just make the comment a minute ago, and I totally agree with you all. When you said that we publicize, you know, being on welfare, you know what? You said 37% of African Americans on welfare, right?
Right.
That number will drastically drop. Let me tell you one thing. You know, you've seen it just as well as I do. You got young black females and males that are in their 20s. You know, there's nothing wrong with them. They won't go out and get a job. If you can't find a job, go to school. You've got all these scholarships, grants, everything. You can go to school, and you can make some of yourself. Just like Jordan just said, you've got to be, you know, you've got to have some type of skill for yourself. Now, if you flip burgers and that's the only thing you can do, at any time you can be let go, and what are you going to do?
Good question.
You have nothing to do. You have no skills.
I mean, if you have no skill, I mean, where's the backup plan? I guess that's what I'm saying.
This is the question. Why are there no skills? All of this money out here, now everybody knows someone that has been in college for 10 years.
Yes.
10 years. We all know at least one person that has been in college for 10 years. Cashing those student loan checks. Why don't we have any skills?
Exactly. And what's the first thing we do? We always blame somebody else for our problems. I can't find a job. I can't do this. They just keep holding us back. People, it's time to wake up. Stop blaming everybody else for your demise. You get what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean, take responsibility.
Right.
Well,
you can't go around blaming everybody for your problems. Make it happen. If you're struggling right now, dig yourself out. You got to grind. I mean, this, you know, I know it's a recession. Things are hard right now. Trust me, I know. You know, I know more better than probably anybody. But you don't hear me complaining. You know, I'm doing what I got to do to make it happen. Stop walking around with our hands out looking for somebody to take care of you. Because guess what, people? It's not going to happen. Nobody's going to take care of you.
No way, you said something that's very real. And this is going to be addressed on a different show, but I just want to point this out right now. Why are we struggling in this recession? Why are we struggling?
Why?
Because we did not do forward planning. Let's just say it.
I agree with that. Because, like, if you look at the idea that you cannot work at a burger joint for 30 years and expect to retire off that, I mean, there's no money in it at all. There's no forward plan in it. I don't see what's the idea of not trying to work hard when you're young. I mean, you have a young and able body. Why wouldn't you work hard when you're young so that when you turn 40, you don't have to work as hard?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't see it. I just
no forward plan, because we're looking at all of our little rappers and the celebrities, and everybody wants to have a gold chain, a platinum chain, hanging down to their knees. Everybody wants to ribs in the fancy car. I mean, let me tell you, it's forward planning. We don't plan for the future, and I can say that I am guilty of doing that as well to a certain extent, because we're right now people. We want stuff right now. We don't want to hold off and kind of see what's going to progress later. We want right now. I know someone right now driving a Lexus, sleeping on a sofa in someone else's house, because he can't afford to pay rent.
That's ridiculous.
Wow.
Like, are you serious?
Yes.
Why don't you? Well,
he just bought the Lexus. This is what's so stupid about it. He just bought the Lexus, okay? He was driving a little compact car, you know, with nothing special, but it got him from point A to point B. But that wasn't fancy. What he went and did, he went and bought a Lexus.
Right. You know what? And that's the most misleading concept. You can't be more truer. We look at these rappers. You know, they got Bentleys, they got the Lamborghinis, and you know just as well as I do, half these people don't even own this stuff. It's all a persona they're carrying. But we gotta be like them.
Everything at the video shoot is rented. That's not their car. That's not their chain. Those aren't their women. Everything in that video was rented for the day.
Exactly.
I don't understand that, and I don't see how one person doing well makes you feel as if you can do well if you piece things together. Okay, I'm going to buy this car now, and I'm just going to let my house suffer, or I'm just going to let this part of my life suffer instead of trying to balance and live according to your paycheck, how much you can pay. Yes, like, I mean, if your car costs more than your rent, like, there's something drastically wrong with it. Like, your car shouldn't be, you shouldn't pay $30,000 for your car and you live in a trailer that you bought for $2,000 that you fixing on with the toilet don't work when the water splatter up every time you turn it on or something like that.
Exactly. But we're not looking at the whole picture. Okay, before this rapper gets this video shoot where everybody's going to rent stuff to make him look extremely rich, how many years was he grinding before he was ever on the radio? We don't think about that. There's a struggle behind everything. We don't think about it.
Right.
But we're getting off track. We're getting off track because, you know, I could preach about this all day. This is a different show, you know, talking about Blacks and Money. That one is definitely coming up. Stay tuned to the show page. But, I mean, the welfare one, I guess, like, what do you say? I don't think that it's only, but I am disturbed that 37% of our 12.8% in the population is on welfare.
Yes, I am disturbed with that, especially with the idea that Black people, we can't rise in a way that should make you want to rise.
You know what? And let me just say this. While we're talking about welfare and the Blacks, let me say this. People ask me all the time, and I'm probably going to get some flack about it. Send me a tweet on Twitter, hit me up on Facebook, send me an email, whatever you want to do to let me know how upset you are with this next statement. People ask me all the time about different shows, and, you know, those of you who know me personally know that I don't watch many urban shows. But, you know, one of the common shows that everybody loves, can't really get into it that deep just because of what we're talking about now. Good Times. I'm going to say it. I was concerned that all those kids, they lived in that same little two-bedroom project house and struggled day to day. Welfare, you know, and all this. Like, I'm just disturbed by that. All of those years, they lived in the project.
Right. We don't, as Black people, we don't have uplifting, you know, series and movies. It's always about, what's the new movie that just came out about the guy who was, you know, was going to the NFL. He was homeless and, you know, it's a good movie.
The Blind Side.
Right, The Blind Side. It seems like every movie, every series, we always have to struggle to get to the top. Why we always have to be on the bottom, struggling, grinding? How come we can't live that lavish life, you know, like everybody else? Why? Why, as Black people, as a Black
Because race, we won't plan for it. We won't sit down. Okay, woman gets pregnant today. She's sitting there thinking about, oh, I need to go apply for my welfare, get on WIC, get Medicaid, do all of those things. We're not sitting there thinking, okay, every month I need to put this much money back. I don't have a good job now. Let me go ahead and start taking classes before I'm too big to sit in the desk. Okay, rather than buy my newborn baby, who doesn't even know he has feet yet, some Jordans, Air Force J's, and all those other little shoes, let me just give him some plain shoes that will cover his feet because, one, he's not walking. Two, it's a baby that's going to, like, grow every other day out of clothes. Like, we don't think about that stuff. That's why we're always on the bottom, pulling ourselves to the top.
Yep.
But I was just disturbed by that show. And to me, it was oppressive. Like, I just hate to see that all these years, this Black family's going to live in the project.
And, like, that's crazy. Because, I mean, if you think about the fact that there's no progression at all.
Please.
Like, none. And it's kind of like making people get content with where they are. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're poor, you'd be like, well, I just accept the fact that I'm going to be poor the rest of my life. That's not acceptable for me at
all. And we do that. We're saying we will go out and we will overspend and we will not forward plan with, well, I'm going to be broke the rest of my life anyway.
Well, I mean, and it's not even just that with poor people. It's like that with the blue collar people as well. Like, have you ever seen a person who get content with just living at this status and don't try to better themselves at all? I mean, honestly, I feel like if you're able, you should always want to get better. It's just like you should always want to learn something new. I mean, if a person who can do many things is a jack of all trades, I mean, you can't get rid of that person. I mean, I can do this. I can fix this. I can do that. I mean, you can always find a job if you know how to do everything.
But you got to have that attitude. You got to have that go-get-em, that ambitious attitude of saying, okay, this is not acceptable. I refuse to live this way. I'm going to make it happen. Many people don't have that. Back in 2005, July 1st of 2005, I was officially laid off from my job. The government did not renew one particular contract for the job I had, so the funding was lost. January 1st, 2005, I was laid off. I went and applied for my unemployment. July 30th, 2005, had a job. Go get them attitude.
6 months. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's how everybody should
think. 6 months.
But it's crazy.
30 days.
You said July?
July. 30 days.
Here, I'm thinking, okay, all right.
30 days. Being on unemployment drove me crazy. I couldn't stand it. First of all, it's a lot of work to be unemployed. You got to call in this number and say, you know, how many jobs you apply for, that interviews you went on. You got to call in by a certain date and then send you money on this day. That's too much work. So I'd rather go to work.
You got to call in numbers on unemployment. Never had unemployment. Well, what can I say?
I was on it once. So I don't know, but, you know, like I said, I don't know. I'm just really disturbed by the things that we're finding out this morning. I'm still going to stick with the fact I believe we are our biggest oppressors. But right now we're going to move on to the next topic. I want to say thank you, Keon, for calling in. I hope you will continue to listen to the show. You have additional comments. You're always welcome to call us back. To all my other callers out there who have not called in yet, don't be shy. You can talk to me. The number is 646-595-4522. That is the call-in number. So let's talk about this last topic. The white man is our biggest oppressor.
I find that funny because, like, how could someone else oppress you?
That's a great question. How could someone else oppress us? I mean,
if we have all these rights, you know what I'm saying? Like, if we have the same rights, quote unquote, that they have, how can they oppress us?
How do we allow it? You know what? And okay, people always say it goes back to slavery. Let's just say what nobody else wants to say. In Africa, we sold our own. Nobody wants to say it. Nobody wants to talk about it. I mean, let's just be honest. There were thousands and thousands and possibly millions of us back then on this continent. How in the world some white men just come to our land.
Our land.
Our land.
And while we out there chasing lions and tigers and bears, and they just come on and just take us. Like, we are big. Like, you tell me how 6'6", if you know that the people on that continent are huge. Like, they're tall. They're not short. They're not little men. And white people are averaging just barely 6 feet. 6'5" person. How do you catch a 6'5" person that can run 10 miles in a day?
Thank you. But let's address this. Okay, Africa was not the South Africa you see with the buildings. This was a jungle.
Yes, literally. Like, they go out and they attack lions.
I mean, so how did they put all of us on a ship and bring us to the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. Had to have had some inside help. They had that.
That was an inside job.
Exactly. Like,
it was an inside job. So, I mean, let's just be honest about that. Okay, so even during slavery, some people who don't read as much don't know that during slavery, certain people were free. they would free certain slaves, like maybe they would do some type of act or, you know, something would happen, and they would free them. So where did these free slaves go while everybody else was still in slavery? Where did they go? They went and set up their own plantation and bought their own slaves. People don't want to talk about that.
There were a bunch of slaves. There were a bunch of free slaves that actually owned hundreds of slaves.
Hundreds. Like, I did the research, and I mean, looking at the numbers, there were many blacks who owned slaves who were 10 times richer than other white plantation owners. I mean, had hundreds. Because probably you the other day, Jordan, you mentioned to me that the average plantation had, what, about 4 or 5 slaves?
Yes. It wasn't many. Like, I mean, just doing random research on Wikipedia, Google, just Googling things, just playing around, like you find out that there weren't as many slaves on each plantation as the books, like Roots, as they picture. It wasn't many at all. You know, 5 to 10 slaves at max.
Okay. So 5 to 10 slaves, you know, but there were, you know, millions of slaves in slavery. It brings up the question to me, you know, how many of us really did own slaves? So I did a little research, and I found out, you know, at one point in time in New Orleans, there were over 3,000 free Negro slaves, as they put it. And of that 3,000, 28% of them owned other slaves.
That's
I mean, and looking at, this one plantation owner, a woman named Antoine, her estate was valued at $264,000, when the average wealth back then of a white man was just under $4,000. Her estate was $204,000. And this is back in the 1800s. That's a lot of bread for the 1800s.
Yeah, that's well into the millions right now. If you put that in today's money, like, that's, she was laid out.
Okay. So let's move forward with this, okay? In all of that, now let's talk about the civil rights movement. Now, big city of Sylvester, Georgia, next door neighbors, Albany, Georgia. Dr. Martin Luther King came to Albany several times. I believe the exact number is he came 6 or 7 times he came to Albany, tried to hold some movements, have some protests, you know, get the people to really sort of push to have this movement going. Because everybody know, like, one of the probably the most oppressed places during these days was the South. Dr. King said, and I quote, "I will not be returning to Albany, Georgia. The people of Albany are not ready for change. They do not desire it. I will not be back." Like, that's basically what he said in the stories. And when I first heard that as a child, I was so bothered by it. But then looking around, I could see, why weren't we behind Dr. Martin Luther King?
Of all people.
We definitely took his birthday off. Like, we're going to be off on MLK Day, you know what I'm saying?
Like, that's ridiculous. Like, how could a person of that stature and who was making so many moves to try to move the black people, how could you just allow, how couldn't you be behind him? Like, I mean, it's kind of crazy in a sense. It doesn't make sense, but then I guess it does make sense whenever you see how we are today and the stereotypes that has been developed. And I mean, it makes sense in the mind frame that we have now. I mean, we just accept the idea that, okay, we ain't going to be anything, so we're not going to do anything. I mean, that's the same mentality that Albany had back then, and you see it today.
Yes, I do.
Exactly. So, I mean,
but it's crazy to me. You're not going to march. You would not march with the man when he was alive, but let your job tell you have to come to work on Martin Luther King Day. Oh, now you want to protest, you want to call the NAACP, you want to talk to the news, you want to talk to the papers. That's not right. You deserve your day off. This day is about you. But when the man was alive, you would not support him. You would not back him. I don't understand this. Like, how do you get to a place in your mind where you are okay with the status quo when the status quo is substandard? How did you get in that mind frame? I don't understand that. The complacency disturbs me.
Well, see, you know what? Like, I think it's, like you said, it's a mindset, and the mindset is a direct, it's directly tied to the fact that black people at one point were not allowed. Like, I mean, if you look at the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when racism really did exist, like when, like, you were, like, when I say, yes, well, how about that, when it was stronger, how about that, when it was stronger, like, you walk out on the street, and like a group of white people beat you up, and it was, nothing was done about it, that type thing, like, I mean, that has really done a number on our minds, because, I mean, you start feeling like, okay, I can't do it if I step out of my bounds. If I step out of bounds or if I step out of my area, I'm going to be scolded by either my black people or I'm going to be scolded by the white people for trying to do something for myself. And that has done a number on a lot of people's minds. I mean, you can't do anything. When your mind tells you that if I say politically correct rather than using the slang words that my people are going to get me, call me a Uncle Tom or whatever you want to do it, like, I mean, that kind of makes you just stay where you are.
And you know, I guess I can sort of see that because as you were speaking, I started thinking about earlier in the show, remember when I used the word colloquialism rather than saying slang?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Right. And so I am criticized highly. And it's funny to me because I would say that most of the time, those criticizing me, I know more about my heritage than they do.
Yeah.
But because I will say colloquialism rather than saying slang, because I do know that that's a word, I'm being quote-unquote acting white, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm being proper with my pinky out and eating cucumber sandwiches at that point, I guess. You know, it's things like that. And that oppresses us. We don't realize that our criticism of our oppresses us.
Yes, that holds us down. And like, what kills me is like when you go around someone and they actually feel like you are the, oh God, she's all proper, he's all proper. Don't do this around them because they're going to say something to you about it. You know, straighten up your language, make you pronounce your E's and your R's and your S's, make you know what I'm saying, things like that. Like, that's kind of crazy because that's how the word is supposed to be pronounced.
Exactly.
Why not say it that way?
Exactly.
I mean, especially if you're in a place where you have to market yourself. Like, I mean, I find it real unprofessional to speak in a slang attitude. Colloquially, is
I mean, but it's true because if you speak a certain way long enough, it becomes your normal language. So how do you then switch it up when you go for a job interview? You're walking in your son. What's up? You know, I feel like, you know, I should be in your neighborhood.
That don't work for you.
Because I don't do it.
Exactly.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, I need to do that one right there, but it's okay.
Criticism. Shame on you. shame. But, I mean, we speak that way a certain way. You know, long enough, that's the way you talk. I see it, you know, in the classroom. The way children text is the way they write.
Oh, God, that kills me. That kills me.
All those symbols, and I don't know what you're saying to me. Why is the three the new E?
Like, I just found out what L-M-A-O. I just found out.
That's my beep.
I just found out what that was. I'm like, why you keep putting that? Like, what is that?
And then we turn it into a song. LOL, smiley face.
Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Is that the only thing you can make music about? Like, what?
Exactly. I don't really know what to say. Very quickly, call on the line. This is Keisha. Who am I speaking with?
This Rod.
What's going on, Rod? Comment this morning.
I'm just talking like I'm from Sylvester. Since you say that's true, I don't believe you.
I am from Sylvester.
Well, do you talk like you're from Sylvester?
How do you talk like you're from Sylvester? So now you're on me about my language. Okay, let me ask you this. How often have you used the word colloquialism?
I'm just talking like I'm from Sylvester.
Same
time do you use? None.
None?
I am from Sylvester.
Yes. Tell me how many times do you use it?
I use it anytime. I mean, that's what that's the correct word for slang. It's colloquialism.
I have somebody else who also wants to comment on what you're saying.
Okay. Very quickly, to comment.
Oh, they don't have anything to say anymore. It was Cameron. He wanted to say hello, and he's enjoying your show.
Oh, well, thank you so very much, Cameron and Rod. Thank you so much for calling in. So we're going to start wrapping up the show right now. We are talking about blacks and stereotypes. Are we our biggest oppressors? I found where it is. I say yes. What do you say, Jordan?
Say yes, but that was obvious. I guess what I feel like is, why are we our biggest oppressors? If we answer that question, I promise you, we would solve all our problems. We will become the dominant, like, position holders in every big-time corporation, college football team, coaches. Like, we would become the top of everything.
You know what? That's the root of the root. E. Commons has a poem, and that's part of the line, the root of the root, the bud of the bud, getting down to the real truth. So that's the question that needs to be answered. So wrapping up the show, you know I like to do the little crazy headline of the day. So here's one for you. Asses escaped from live nativity scene in Colorado. Yes. I said asses, and I'm talking about donkeys. Apparently, two donkeys that were part of a nativity scene outside a church in Colorado escaped. They got out of the little fenced-in area, whatever, I guess. And apparently, they were thinking about canceling the whole little viewing of the nativity scene because those donkeys were missing, because apparently they could not have the scene without their cars. And I'm thinking to myself when I read this, I thought baby Jesus was the star of that.
Wow.
That made the news. That made the news. It made national news, people. Donkeys escaped, and they almost had to cancel their nativity scene.
Yeah, that's stupid to me. I just realized that's really stupid to me. But okay.
I mean, even Ricky Bobby knew that baby Jesus was the star of the nativity scene.
6 pounds, 9 ounces.
Baby Jesus.
The little bitty baby Jesus rattle, lobbing out the mouth.
I don't know. It's funny to me. But that's crazy headline of today. Some things I want to plug in to you right now. If you're looking at the show page, you probably noticed that one of the books I have up there is Race Matters, Dr. Cornel West. If you have not read that book, I advise you to pick up a copy. So pick up a copy of Race Matters and check it out. And also, this other book that you definitely want to read is titled Silent Tears. Someone you know wrote that book. I hear it's a great read. It's page turner, like will put you to sleep at night, you know, running count sheets, you just count the silent tears. So Silent Tears on sale on Amazon.com. Definitely want to tell everyone to continue to listen to the show every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. You will find me just like today, same time, 11 a.m. Also, please hit me up on Twitter, Kay Sherelle, that's SHERRELLE. Don't talk about it. You know, my parents did it to me. What can I say? Kay Sherelle on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, Kimberly Sherelle. Definitely become a fan. Check out the website, SherelleInc.com. Send me an email. Let me know what you think about the show. If you have any particular ideas about shows that you would like to hear discussed on the air, let me know. I mean, I'm open to many things. To everyone out there that listened to the show today, I want to say thank you. I love you. You are the reason why I get up so bright and early on a Saturday morning. It's because I know you're sitting in front of your computer screen waiting on me to bring it to you 100% real, and I do appreciate that. Like I said, just hit me up. Let me know what you think about everything. And this is Goal of the Week. Count how many times you use colloquial terms, slang people. Count how many times you use slang in your everyday language. So right now I'm going to take you out the show with my favorite Christmas song because, you know, today is Kwanzaa, so everybody celebrates Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'll see you later. Donny Hathaway, This Christmas.
How much fun it's gonna be together.